as a podcast. It's called Vanity Project. It's about vanity projects. It's hosted by me, Riley Connell, and another guy called James Colley, whose voice you're about to hear.
Hello, Riley. Good job.
Thanks. I think I failed it. They say start with a bang, hit them hard with energy straight out the gate.
It was a fantastic beginning, Riley. I'm very proud of you.
Well, thank you so much. And I actually would like to start today's episode by a little shout out to one of the listeners of our podcast, Jim, who this week told me that they really enjoy my intros to the podcast. So thank you, Jim, and sucked in, James Colley.
I really enjoy your intros. I would say I enjoy your intros much more than you enjoy your intros.
I just didn't realize introducing the podcast every week would lead to such sustained bullying from you, I guess.
It's any opportunity I get, honestly, of course. You have to rise to the occasion.
That is true. James, how are you and what's going on?
I am sleepy and a baby is getting bigger, and that is how my world is contained right now. But otherwise, it's everything is all very well. The Penrith Panthers are 8-0. You know, Bridie, all the important things are taken care of.
It sounds like all the bases are covered, which I'm thrilled. Now, can you please tell us all whose album we are listening to today?
Okay, well, if you are listening to this podcast because you clicked the link for the podcast that said we are doing Let Them Talk by Hugh Laurie, I'm here to tell you we are listening to Hugh Laurie's Let Them Talk. So I'm usually waiting for the person that we listen to embarrass themselves, but I love Hugh Laurie, and I love Hugh Laurie's musical comedy. I still hold, like, Mystery by Hugh Laurie, which if you do not know it, I highly recommend you give it a YouTube. I'm 4,000 years old. It is one of my favorite comedy songs going around, and I've always loved, like, from a bit of Fry Laurie, all of his music. So I was never concerned that he wouldn't be good at music. I'm more concerned of what attitude are you going to bring to the album?
Yes, I think that's a very fair concern to voice right up the top. But as we're about to find out, the album has a really assured attitude the whole way through from start to finish. But before we get into the album itself, you know, obviously we're comedians. Hugh Laurie is a very, very famous comedian. But for those of you who might not know as much about him, let's dig into the backstory a little bit. He's been around forever.
Yeah, I imagine there were a group of people who know Hugh Laurie, or he becomes prominent in their lives when he is Dr. House, which if anyone hasn't seen the series, is about a wonderful house that diagnoses problems when you walk inside of it. It is like his like background comedically goes back to Cambridge Footlights and like a year that I believe is him, Stephen Fry and Emma Thompson, which seems like a hell of a class to be a part of. It's as influential, some have said, as Bridie and I going to Sydney Uni. There we go.
We're so egotistical, making the same joke at the same time. Yeah, people talk about it. It's thrilling. They're like, whoa, James and Bridie did the same weird sketch show at the same time?
Hugh has, like, a remarkable career. And if anything, it was, like, impressive to see him. He was such a, like, goofy comedy character for so long. Things like Young Wads and Blackadder and such. That, like, House was the departure to, I think, a wider audience of him being able to do dramatic acting and having, like, a non-silly comedy. Like, silly in the, like, Monty Python school of comedy of, like, you know, big characters, big squeaky voices, large goose steps, you know, all the things that a British person found funny in the 60s. Like, it's... I think it's, like, interesting that he's come to... And what we're getting now is this is an album from serious, sophisticated Hugh Laurie.
That's right. I think that's true because he's had such a wide-ranging career, both with the sorts of projects he's done, but the sort of attitudes and sense of humour and styles that he's applied to all of those projects as well. He's also a novelist. He's done a thousand things. He's really led a lot of lives, which is definitely something that makes him such an interesting character study. I thought before we get into the album, we could play Two Truths and a Lie with some Hugh Laurie trivia that I have found / knew already. Do you want to play?
Yeah, go on.
All right, Two Truths and a Lie. Hugh Laurie, among his comedic brilliance and all of those other accolades we've just said, is also a world championship level rower. He is a Guinness World Record holder. or he appears on a Meatloaf album.
Ooh, okay, this is tough. So he's lanky enough that I like a rowing background isn't shocking to me. And part of what I was thinking when I was listening to the album was, I think if Hugh Laurie was a bit more jacked, he would have been in a Marvel film by now. Like that they would have hit him with that serum that they hit Kumail Nanjiani with, and he comes out and he's suddenly, you know, incredibly like 95 kilograms of pure muscle, and he is Doctor Strange or whatever.
And that's funny because weirdly enough, it's the opposite thing for me. Like they said, I'm too jacked to be in a Marvel movie, and I'm quite inadequate.
Now, Meatloaf, I feel like if you've made that up, you're playing to my sensibilities. You are saying like, you know, I want that to be true greatly. And I think, though, if you had made up Guinness World Record, you would have made up the Guinness World Record. That's like, I know, I don't think Bridie Connell could. So I'm not playing the Hugh Laurie game. I'm playing the Bridie Connell game. Like,
That's very clever. Don't play the game, play the man. Yeah,
I don't think Bridie Connell could have resisted coming up with what world record she believes Hugh Laurie has. So I'm going to say, I can see Meatloaf happening because he was in the UK for Spice World, and maybe Hugh Laurie gets a spot on an album. So I'm going to say it's rowing.
Well, guess what? I told you the game was called Two Truths and a Lie. The game is actually called Gaslight Your Friends because they're all true. They're all true. So
can I guess the Guinness World Record?
Of course.
So what kind of Guinness World Record?
I mean,
would
it pertains to TV. Like it's not some random like he ate the most hot dogs.
Oh damn it! Because I thought Hugh Laurie might be the person who has held a note the longest, or you know, played the piano with milk dripping on him for the you know, the bullshit records. Okay, I want to just hear what the record is.
Okay, in the 2011 Guinness World Records, he was listed as the most watched leading man on television. And that same year, he was also credited as one of the highest paid actors in TV drama, earning £250,000 per episode of House, which is just staggering to me.
Yeah, that is staggering. Why the fuck is that a Guinness World Record? Is this why you have to buy the book every year? Because it also includes what's the highest rated TV show? Because I don't think it's House anymore. For some reason, I don't think Dr. House MD is the biggest star in the world.
He appears on the Meatloaf album Hang Cool, Teddy Bear, on the track for If I Can't Have You, which is a delightful fact. And you know what? In an alternate timeline, he's famous as an Olympic rower and not a comedian and musician because rowing was his first career choice. So he went to Eton and Cambridge and kind of came from that background mm-hmm. where rowing and all those sports are really a big part of the culture there. He was a phenomenal rower. He went to the Junior World Championships. He was on track to become part of the Olympic team until a bout of glandular fever put paid to that. So that's what led him to, he couldn't do that anymore. So he joined the Drama and Comedy Society instead.
So this is the good version because like the same thing happens to Corey Bernardi, and he, instead of being in the Awesome Foursome, he ends up in the Liberal Party. So there's like, it's like, which way, Western man? You come to a fork in the road where your rowing dreams will not make it. And since you had rowing dreams, you're probably a tall, lanky white guy with a lot of money. Which way are you going? Are you pissing it away in an improv course, or are you going into the Liberal Party and becoming one of the worst politicians the country's ever had? It's your choice.
So I think we should start getting into the album itself. This is a very blues album. There's a lot of like roots and spiritual and American folk music on this album.
Yeah, let's start off with the first track, St. James Infirmary.
I went down to St. James Infirmary. Down on a long white table.
That is St. James Infirmary from Let Them Talk 2011, Hugh Laurie. Bridie, what do you reckon?
First of all, there's a lot of classics, a lot of standards on this album, and St. James Infirmary is one of them. It opens not with him singing, but with just this stunning piano solo, which goes for a couple of minutes. So he not only sings on this album, but he's playing the keys. He also, I learned this researching for this, he also plays a saxophone and drums and guitar. Not on this album, but he just sort of is one of those people that can seem to do a lot of things. I found the opening to this, the piano solo, really moody, kind of really set the tone. And partway through the song, I realized I've heard this before. And then I realized this is the first Vanity Project album that I have listened to outside the world of Vanity Projects. It's just really? A jazz album that is at the recesses of my mind from years ago. I've heard this before.
Oh my God, that's it. Because I found like when I was listening to piano intro of this, I thought like this is maybe the strongest opening of a Vanity Project we've had, because it's a real way of very subtly saying, by the way, I'm good at this. Like that, like
he's so this good.
Yeah, like this is not going to be shit. I know what I'm doing, which is a really useful thing, because like you, particularly when it's a beloved star, by now we're clenching as we load up the first track and being like, oh, please don't destroy my opinion of you. And he really comes in letting us know, no, it's okay. I know what I'm doing here. It's going to be fine. I was thinking, listening to this, this is the album that Robert Downey Jr. thought he was making. Like, as he sat down, he thought, yeah, this is the album I'm putting out.
Oh, and if you don't know what we're talking about, head back to our very first episode of Vanity Project, where we covered his 2004 classic, The Futurist. Yeah, it's a really strong start. I will say, I don't think he has, like, the strongest singing voice in the world, but it's definitely, like, you feel comfortable enough listening to it. But he really excels as a pianist in a way that, you're right, puts us at ease as a listener in a way that many of our Vanity Projects have not.
Well, let's keep going along, because this is a strong start, and let's move to You Don't Know My Mind.
Oh, baby, you don't know. You don't know my mind. When you see me laughing just to keep from crying.
That is You Don't Know My Mind, Hugh Laurie. Now, a couple of tracks in, again, very good, like fun, upbeat. But a point that you made a little bit earlier that I think becomes more and more apparent is his voice is weird. It's a weird voice to have on these tracks. And it's not that he's singing wrong. He's singing fine, but it's weird that it's coming out of his mouth with his voice.
Yeah, I think so. It's tuneful, it's upbeat, there's sort of nothing wrong with it, but it's just not as assured as his piano playing is. It feels a little bit like not fully committed to or something. Does that make sense?
There's a few tracks where, and there's one in particular we'll talk about, but there's a few tracks where I'm wondering, are you putting on a comedy voice while you're singing this? And the other thing I found interesting about this, and became apparent around this point in the album, just a couple tracks in, is that this genre is, in general, like, quite fun at times, like, quite funny and has, like quirky turns of phrase and stuff like that. And this is quite serious. Like, it's almost like you're overcorrecting against being a comedian, where you're like, this genre is naturally funny. You're allowed to have, like, quirky little lines or stuff like that. I'm thinking of like the, you know, even Johnny Cash, Flush Down the Bathroom of Your Heart might be a good example, where like you totally. You are a bit fun and this is not.
I agree with that, but I sort of think we haven't gone far enough in either direction. We either need to stay around, you know, how we already know him in that fun comedy realm and really go for that, or we need to go more into blues. You know, it's in the title, it's the blues, it's moody, it's often mournful, it's so soulful, but none of that kind of emotion is coming through his voice. It's definitely coming through the piano, but it's not really connecting so much through the vocals. It's funny because when I think of some of the comedy songs of Hugh Laurie's that I love, and there's some great ones from his sketch show, A Bit of Fry and Laurie, he does a great rap, which I was obsessed with when I was a kid, called Good Ass Mother Liker, which I just thought was so funny at the time. And also even in Jeeves and Wooster, you know, the classic Bertie Wooster character that he plays. He plays the piano and sings in character as Bertie Wooster a lot in that, with his really plummy toffee accent, and leans into the comedy of that. And I actually feel a lot more that it's a really competent, comfortable, confident vocal performance when he is leaning into the character a bit more. But I think we could have a bit more of a character and emotional choice here.
Yeah, I think that, like, it's hard to go from Cambridge to the blues. And I think, like, it's, and I think, like,
which, funnily enough, is the title of my book.
I think, like, it's like, I understand, I think he loves, like, obviously loves the genre. I feel like there's a few times in this album that we'll come across where he does hand over the mic, and as soon as you hear another voice in it, you're like, oh yeah, oh yeah, like, this is a more traditional sound
of
the blues.
That's what the blues is.
It's just, it's this, there's so few, like, uniquely American genres, and this one is, feels uniquely American.
It is not a genre I associate with Oxbridge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just, you can't go from a rowing tournament to this. It's like...
Now let's listen to the next track, which is Six Cold Feet, which is about when you were left at the altar, not by not one, but three potential grooms.
Don't cry, baby. Don't cry after I'm gone. I've let the good man love you, and
Six Cold Feet, Hugh Laurie. Like, here's what a lot of this feels like to me, is that we're watching a movie that Hugh Laurie is in, and it's a scene where, like, this is a theater dining thing where your other characters are watching him perform at a piano bar in a theater. Like, it's weird to say this, like, it feels like it can only exist in that world because it's slightly wrong.
Well, it's funny that you say it like that, because there's a few episodes of House where, you know, there are these sort of moody, you know, moments on cool grey nights where Dr. House just finishes the episode, you know, with a whiskey in hand, playing his piano in his apartment. And it sort of feels exactly like that. Like, that's what we've captured here listening to this track. Rather than Hugh Laurie the musician, it is sort of like, oh, that amazing doctor, or, you know, the dinner party. Exactly. That's kind of the vibe. The instrumentation, the arrangement is incredible. The band is fantastic and includes some really incredible jazz and blues musicians. But there's just nothing about this which is... grabbing us
it's,
by the collar.
Do you know what? I feel like what happened with the success of House is that like, people suddenly realized that Hugh Laurie has this incredible emotional depth. And I don't think there's anything more dangerous than telling a middle-aged man, we realize you have emotional depth. Because all of a sudden, you're going to get this, or you're going to get just the world's worst poetry-based novel that overly sexualizes someone. Like, they're your two parts. It's like misguided blues or horribly horny novella. And there's no middle ground in that unless you just buy a Harley and go, you're too busy going down the road.
I don't think it's misguided at all. I think it's really competent, but I in a weird way, wish it was less technically perfect, a little rougher around the edges, and a bit more raw. Like, that's what you want from the blues and anything kind of soulful. Shall we move on to the next song?
Let's jump forward to Battle of Jericho.
Hands. Joshua fit the Battle of Jericho. 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 Joshua fit the Battle of Jericho. When the walls came tumbling down.
Is the Battle of Jericho. I love this. I was back in. Like, this is a really fun song. And this is kind of what... So I feel like what we went from was like a moody, smoke, I don't even want to say smoke-filled. The dinner theatre is too nice. As soon as someone's seen it at Grand Piano, it's not smoke-filled. But like, we've gone from dinner theatre to what I think is a much nicer genre of music, which is house party. Someone's got a piano with their house music. Like that.
And by house party, do you mean the show House? And we're just celebrating our favourite actors from that show House?
Yes, it's that blonde guy and the other ones that also didn't do anything. This feels like the kind of, like, you could imagine being at Hugh Laurie's place and he sits around and plays this on piano, and that's really fun. Like, this is one of the most fun biblical stories I've ever heard turned into a blues song.
Okay, sorry, because obviously blues and Bible stories are important. I can't believe you just said that the cast of House haven't done much. Are you kidding? Do you know how stacked that cast is? Tell Olivia Wilde she's not doing anything. Tell Lisa Edelson and Jesse Spencer. What are you talking about? Anyway, back to the song. It's very good. This is my favorite so far, I think. I really like the arrangement. It's a bit folkier. There's some amazing strings that come in. The vibe, the emotion, like the whole atmosphere really shifts up a notch, and I really like that. I'm back on
board.
That
was Olivia Wilde?
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's so many famous people in it. Oh, man, I can't believe you. Hey, guess what?
What?
Next song features my favorite vocal performance on the whole album. Here's After You've Gone.
After you're gone and left me crying, after you're gone, ain't no denying, you feel blue, you gon' feel sad, you'll miss the best love in you ever had.
So James, that was After You've Gone. You know how I said this features my favorite vocal on the track? I was listening to this album, and I try not to read too much about the album before we listen, and I was like, gosh, he's really stepped it up a notch here. This is fantastic. And then I looked at the track listing, and I saw that actually this has a guest vocalist on this track, and it's Dr. John, who obviously is a very well-known singer. But notwithstanding, I do think this is a fantastic vocal and a really great track.
It's funny you should say that, because I was listening to this while gardening, so I wasn't looking at the track list at all. And when this came on, I was like, oh, I am not comfortable with him doing this voice. I'm not sure. I don't think you would get away with this now. So I am thrilled to find out that was not Hugh Laurie. That is, in fact, an actual singer with a different human name and soul.
You know who Dr. John is, don't you?
I know Dr. Hook.
Both great. Dr. Hook, Dr. John, and Dr. House. Now that is the track we want to hear.
Who is Dr. John? Imagine, like, I'm an idiot, right? And this is for the audience benefit, because the audience don't know shit. And I know who Dr. John is. But if you're explaining to them who John PhD is, who is that?
Dr. John... he's passed away now, R.I.P., was an American singer and songwriter, and he...
You are reading the Wikipedia. You are 100% reading the Wikipedia.
I'm not reading Wikipedia, thank you so much. How dare you? You didn't even know who he was. I can't believe you've never heard of Dr. John.
But you described it as, Dr. John is an American singer and songwriter, citation needed, who was born in...
Okay, that's fair. It did sound a lot like that. All right, shut up. You're teasing me. You're so rude. He's a famous jazz musician. He was incredible. We had like a compilation album of a whole bunch of songs, but when I was growing up, so I knew his voice. But I think the thing which probably is not the highlight of his career, but it's the thing that his voice sticks out to me, is that he sang one of the songs on the Disney movie The Princess and the Frog, which is an underrated Disney movie with an amazing soundtrack. It's so good. And so I got obsessed with that soundtrack, and that's kind of how I found Dr. John again. I do know Dr. Hook much better than I know Dr. John. But yeah, I recommend you check him out.
I did love that though, like the, you don't know Dr. John from the Princess and the Frog soundtrack.
Funny. No, he was just like in, he was a session musician for a long time, so he played in a lot of different bands and did a whole bunch of stuff and won 1,000 Grammys and was just kind of a mainstay of American. Okay, it's not about him this episode, just you go look him up.
All right, let's listen to Swanee River.
Way down upon that Swanee River.
Is Swanee River, Hugh Laurie. A lot of fun. A lot more fun than I thought, like, just from the intro, I thought we're in for a slow and boring track here. I will say, like, this album doesn't have, like, it's a long album. We are skipping through songs because there are, like, 15 tracks on the non-deluxe version of it. But there are very few that drag. Like, yeah. This is a pretty fun album. Like, you are deeper into it than you realize pretty quick.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I like this one. It's really fun. He's letting the keys shine again, which is great. Such a jaunty kind of solo, which just makes me feel deeply inadequate, given that I've spent this entire weekend playing the piano and just in my wildest dreams could never sound like him, which is great. That's what you want an album to do, give you an annoying sense of inadequacy that stays with you long after the album is finished. I think that's a mark of a great artist. Shall we skip ahead?
Yeah, can we go to John Henry?
Of course we can.
I got 99 miles of track I want to line back. I'm going to line them by the light of the moon. I'm going to line them by the light of the moon.
That is John Henry, Hugh Laurie. This might be my favorite vocal performance on the track, and it's also not,
not Hugh Laurie. Who is
in
it?
In fact, I would say this: it's Irma Thomas from The Princess and the Frog. And the thing I love, though, about it, what really stands out for me, let's say, for this, is when Hugh's voice comes in, it's fine. Like, it does, again, stick out. Like, this is a weird voice to have on this. And maybe it's part of me is like, that's Hugh Laurie's voice. That's Hugh Laurie's famous voice that I've known my whole life. But it's quite a nice tone, but I don't know if it melds quite the way I would like. It just stands out for me. It was like the two major things stood out for me was that. I'm not sure. I love the song, but I'm not sure how much it melds. And goddamn, Americans love singing about John Henry. The dude tried to beat a steam shovel and died, guys. I'm sure, like, it's someone tried to run out, like, outrun a car once and got a cramp. We don't sing about them for an hour.
I love that that's your takeaway from this song. Is that you're outraged? Are you just upset that no one's written a song about you?
Yeah, I lose to steam engines every damn day. I try and boil water faster than a kettle can, and I fail every day. And I would love just, like, John Henry's somewhat of a hero as a guy who does one day of really hard work and then dies rather than do another. So that's honestly my personal goal.
I'm really glad to see that you've taken the point of these emotional lyrics here and the beautiful arrangement, that it's really hit home in the way that I think the artists intended. Shall we move on to the next song, which has a great title because it's about dogs? Spoiler alert, it's called The Police Dog Blues.
I'm scared to bother round her house at night. She's got a police dog and he's spoiling for a fight.
That's Police Dog Blues, and I will remind you at this point that ACAB does include the dogs.
Oh my God. That's a terrible thing to say, James. Oh my God. So the song is about this girl that he can't get off her mind, but the problem is she's got a police dog that he is afraid she will sit on him if he goes over to her house. My favorite lyric in this is, his name is Rambler, and when he gets a chance, he leaves his mark on everybody's pants. It doesn't work in my accent because it doesn't rhyme. Hang on, I'm trying to get. His name is Rambler, and when he gets a chance, he leaves his mark on everybody's pants, which for about anybody else other than a dog. It's a terrible lyric.
We do like get a lot of detail about this dog. Again, I wasn't checking the title as I was listening, and so as this song went along, I'm like, okay, yep, and she's got this dog and stuff, and you're like, we're hearing about this dog quite a bit. I know a lot more about the dog than her, really. There's, you know, before she sets that dog on me, like, you know, there's some nice little wordplay and things like that throughout the song. Rambler's a weird name for a dog. I wasn't a huge fan of this song, but what it did stick out to me was that when this came up, I realized that I had initially been listening to this album on shuffle. And it does not matter. It really does, like... There is no overwhelming theme. Like, other than it's all vaguely this, it's a blues song, you know. It's the old theme, like, you play a blues song backwards and the guy has a great day. But otherwise, like, you know what's happening in a blues song. Like, there isn't an album feel for me. At the very least, that, like, this has 15 tracks, and if it had 11 tracks, you wouldn't be like, where's that emotional journey I was missing from those four other tracks?
I would completely agree with that. Bunch of great singles, but I don't really feel so much of an arc, which, you know, is okay. Not every album has to have that, but it definitely isn't here as much as it is Prison and some of the other albums we've covered, even if they haven't been as musically competent as this one. I'm not going to lie, James, I kind of got distracted halfway through the song and I started in my head imagining what a song about Brando and Boss, our dogs, would be about. It'd be a much more cheerful song, I think.
I don't know. I have nothing but bad feelings about Brando lately. He has eaten a lot of my dear sweet child's toys. And you know what? Do you know what's an unfortunate thing, Bridie?
What's that? You
go to hand your baby a stuffed animal and you realize its eyes have been eaten out, and you're like, oh God, please don't form memories yet. Please don't form memories at this faceless wombat I've handed you.
That is absolutely horrifying. Maybe Grace should eat some of... Maybe your baby should eat some of his toys just to even the score.
Yeah, actually, that's not a bad idea. I'm gonna get Grace to just wreck some of his stuff.
Let's move along.
Girl, she's long and tall, sleeps in the kitchen with the pizza in the hall. Like tomatoes in the red hot. Yeah, she got it for sale. Yeah, she got it for sale. Like tomatoes in the red hot. Yeah, she got it for sale. Tamana's in the red hot, yeah, she got it for sale. Got two for a nickel and four for a dime. I'd sell him all, but they ain't none of mine.
They're red hot. Hugh Laurie, what do you reckon, Brody?
I reckon I'm going to call it now. That has to go on the playlist. It's such a fun song.
I will agree that this has to go on the playlist. And I will agree that this is the most, this is the area where Hugh Laurie probably feels the most comfortable. Or like that I'm the most comfortable having him. I would also say... this is the kind of pointless, bullshit, annoying song that, like, if you're listening to a Beatles album, this is the kind of song that falls between two absolute classics. Like, you would have like, Blackbird and Let It Be, but in the middle is this fucking song where you're like, okay, I guess we're now in the tamale world. All right.
Hard disagree. This is the classic. Let It Be. Who? What? Hey, Jude, what is that even about? This is the content that Bridie wants. To be fair, this is also the song that I could most imagine my beloved Bertie Wooster singing. So maybe that's why it felt so, like, right for me to hear Hugh Laurie's voice singing the song. But I really enjoy it. It's so fun.
Just on the Beatles tangent, I'm not sure if I've told you this, but I watched the Get Back doco with Miranda, and I'm a big Beatles fan. She is not a big Beatles fan, and it's amazing watching it with her. And she, like, they'll be noodling about, and for anyone who says, it's like 8 hours in real time of them noodling about and trying to find songs, and they'll be playing something, and she'll be like, oh, that's quite pretty. That's really a nice song. And I, as a beer fan, I'm like, nah, that's nothing. They're wasting their time here. And then they'll be like, me, Mr. Mustard. And I'm like, it's me, Mr. Mustard. They found me, Mr. Mustard. It's just, it's the distance, like, what this made me think of, like, the line between a all-time Beatles song and just some bullshit that someone's doing that might have just entirely lost their mind is very thin.
Yeah, I think if I was like, hey, James, I've written a series of songs about mustard, you would advise me to write about anything else. But some people can take those ideas and spin them into gold, much like we can spin into gold this song about Red Hot Tamales.
I would actually love a whole album of mustard.
We can call it Keen Ass. All right, we're up to the next song, which features not one, but two guest vocalists and, well, is another of my favorite tracks on the album. This is Baby, Please Make a Change.
I'll tell you something that'll do you good. Better get your man out of his neighborhood. Baby, please make a change. Baby, please make a change. Baby, please make a change. I think it will do.
Baby, please make a change. Now, one of our guest vocalists, Irma Thomas, we have already heard and spoken about. Bridie, who is the other guest vocalist on that song?
Did not even need to look it up. His voice is so unmistakable. It is none other than Sir Tom Jones. And delighted to welcome him to the podcast today. Hello, Tom. Imagine, though. Imagine. How good would that be? Wait, is he alive? Oh, God.
He's alive.
Oh, thank God. I was like, have I just done something awful?
There's a clinical psychologist near me who has a sign out on the street whose name is Tom Jones. And every time I walk past, I get stuck in my head for a long time. Like, well, doc, this is what's going on. It's not unusual. And it will never leave my head. I feel like over the last couple of songs, I have found where I want Hugh Laurie to be performing, and Tom Jones unlocks it, because what this is the best performance at the BAFTAs. Like, there's no, or like whatever that, you know how they do a night for the Queen? They're fucking mad for the Queen, but they do a night for the Queen and they do little songs for her and she's like, ah, you can live. It's one of those nights, like, that you get a Tom Jones and a Hugh Laurie.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. The energy of it is totally, totally in that vibe. I think this is probably one of the highest energy tracks on the whole album as well. And credit to him. Sir Tom Jones always does bring the energy with him.
Tom Jones is British Jimmy Barnes, who himself is Scottish.
Whoa. That's great. I think they'd both be thrilled with that. Yeah, I think it is a great track, and I think it kind of sets us up, taking us into that final track. It's like, on the way up and out, let's go out with a bang, and I think they definitely deliver on that count.
This is the last track, the eponymous Let Them Talk, and we can discuss whether we feel this is going out with a bang.
And let them whisper. Between you and I.
That was Hugh Laurie, Let Them Talk. Now, Bridie, as our last track, I'm just going to posit this one thing. If Let Them Talk wasn't such a good name for a Vanity album, would this track be on the album at all?
Well, I don't think it should be the final song. As I just said, nope. I feel like we were set up for such a big finish. It was so much fun. The party's in full swing. And then it's just mood killer. Like, nothing wrong with it, but the placement of this track completely loses any momentum that we've built.
But then everything else is so fun as well. Like, if I'm going past, I can't find a spot that it does fit in the album. And I think that's because it doesn't fit in the, it's nowhere near as fun as anything else. And like we're saying, this is 15 tracks long. And in the same way that you have never in your life seen a stand-up show where you're like, 6 more minutes, do it. Like, this could have gone out, like, without this track. And hell, do you know what, Hugh? You can still call it Let Them Talk. I won't badmouth you. That's fine. Still call it that.
Yeah.
But I don't think, I think there's a couple in here that you could do away with and it would be fine.
I agree. agree with that. But that's
good. Like, there's most of the albums we do is like, there are two songs here that aren't hugely embarrassing to you personally, and that's somewhat of a success. So to just have a couple that are like, this is fine, but not necessary, it's still a good mark to get.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And, you know, that's our opinion. We can talk about the reception of the general public for the album. And it did fairly well, actually. It sold 192,000 copies. It was the biggest selling blues album of 2011 in the UK. It charted in various countries around the world. It did really well in Austria randomly, which I quite enjoy. It made the top 40 on the ARIA charts here for blues, which is great. Like, it did pretty well.
Do you think, though, if this... So this is riding the house wave. Everyone had house fever. It was 2011. You couldn't get a bloody enough of it. Kids were diagnosing each other with very rare and specific forms of lupus in the streets. You couldn't get enough of house fever. Do you think that if this was released this year, it would chart anywhere near the same?
No, I think you got to strike while the iron's hot, you know, and the iron was very hot.
He picked his moment, and like, it's not, again, it's not bad. And like, this is like, a lot of the ones we see are either you are too young to know better, or you are desperately trying to add depth to yourself. I feel like he has already, like, he was impressing everyone. Everyone's like, who is this wildly talented man who can do all kinds of things? And it feels like this was just something in him that he needed to get out. Mm-hmm. That is fine. We were so hepped up on House. It's so weird now to think back on what is a fine show. It's not like I don't have that much to say about House, but it's fine. It is amazing how horny we were for House in the early 2010s.
Frothed it. We could not get enough. I don't feel that he needed to get this album out. I take away the feeling from listening to this album that he just goes, you know what? One of my favorite things to do is sit down at the piano and play a bunch of songs, and here are some of the songs I love to play.
I would agree. I think you're right. I feel like this would be a fantastic night to see live and weird to hear on an album.
Yeah.
Like, because, like, you need, I guess you kind of need, like, if this was a live band, they would just play these things. You had gone out, you're in cocktail seating, you're watching Hugh Laurie play all these things. What an amazing night. Mm-hmm. When you hear this captured in album form, I don't know, there's just something about that. It's such a live music, like, vibe to it that it's very odd to sit and listen to it in this way.
Yeah, I think that's true. speaking of what would probably be a really fun night live to go and see. Hugh Laurie is also in another band. Do you know this? Called
No
Band from TV, which you can probably gather from the name, is a band made up of American TV actors who get together every so often and do gigs, and all the money goes to charities of their choice, which is a lovely idea, and it has made me think all week about who the Australian version of that band would be.
Can I hear the American band members?
There's quite a lot of them. So they, you know, like, cycle through based on availabilities, oh, okay. You know. But they have, obviously, Hugh Laurie, Jesse Spencer, also from House, which is great.
That's the only other gig he has. That's it. It's this, and he plays band from TV.
You know nothing. He was on Neighbours. He did Chicago Fire. He's done heaps. Shush. He plays violin.
He's
so cool.
B-A-N-N-E-D from TV.
Oh, my God. Terry Hatcher. Do you know who that is, James?
Like, by name, yes.
But she's from Desperate Housewives. She's super famous. Do you know who George Garcia is?
Yes.
The guy from Lost. The girl from Heroes, Hayden Panettiere, who's also done like 1,000 other shows.
Oh, Nashville, Anakin and Skywalker, stuff. Yeah.
And she is a great singer. There's been heaps of people. Yeah, it's so that's a cute, fun piece of trivia that is fairly inconsequential, but I take your point. Like, some of these things, you're like, oh, this would be great live. It's all about the atmosphere in the room. I wouldn't want to listen to the album from Band from TV, I don't think. So, James, that brings us to the most important question that we ask every episode, which is, was this album a mistake?
I don't think so. I don't think it can be, because I think it's remarkable he didn't make a bigger mistake, considering how wild we all were for House. There should be, like, a lot more, like, embarrassing sexy photo shoots. There should be, like, worse choices. Like, he could well have a, like, portrait series of just the worst art you've ever seen on Earth. Like, or convince that, like, the things that can happen when a guy is told he's deep. He could have very much a photography series of just bridges, and believe that it's saying a lot about the world. Like, if this is your outlet to being told you are the best in the world and everyone loves you, good and, I would say, remarkably humbled result, and also he's a very good musician.
Yeah. I'm inclined to agree with a lot of that. I don't think this album was a mistake. I added a couple of the songs to my liked tracks. There's some really nice, beautiful performances in there that I'll definitely listen to again. But I think I will listen to them as singles rather than as an album in its entirety. Yep. I also think that some of the albums we've listened to on this podcast are objectively much, much worse that I will definitely listen to again. This is competent and lovely, but hasn't really made a huge impact on me. But I don't think it's a mistake.
No. And do you know what? Quite a nice thing to do a bit of hungover gardening to.
Oh, isn't that nice?
What we should all aspire for.
James.
Yes, Brady.
I have already told you what I would like to add to the playlist. What would you like to add to the playlist?
I think you're right. I think, like, their Red Hot is a good... But I want Battle of Jericho in there. Battle of Jericho is so much fun. I think that together they tell the story of the album, which is, we skipped a couple of tracks here, but quite heavy on the biblical references, as blues music tends to be. Upbeat, fun, a little weird. I think that's a good selection for the album. Now, if you want to check out our playlist, it's at Vanity Project Podcast Playlist. Easy to say, easy to remember. On Spotify, you can listen through all the tracks and just destroy your algorithm. Otherwise, if you have enjoyed the show, obviously you just rate and review it, which is what everyone does for podcasts. And you don't need to be told, because that's how we live in the gig economy. And you know, if you enjoy any kind of product and service, you need to rate and review, because that's how we assign value in this world. We tell an algorithm how many stars it needs. Bridie, can you end the show, please? I'm going to be on this.
You can't see this. James is bleeding from his eyes. It's quite entertaining. He hates doing that so much. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Follow us on Instagram, do all the things. We love you. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
So he's a doctor that's a house?